Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for December 11th, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and as we do each and every week, we're going to talk the big shows in pro wrestling. And we had a couple big shows yesterday on Saturday. In the afternoon, we had ROH Final Battle and some big announcements related to ROH after that in the media scrum with Tony Khan. And at night we had NXT Deadline. So it was a double header of big shows that we will discuss here tonight. A quick programming note before we get too far into things. I will be out of town visiting family for the holidays beginning next weekend. So I anticipate having Wrestling Night in America next Sunday, just with a guest host in my stead. And then the week after that is Christmas Day, so I would assume don't look for a new show that day. I'll have to get with Pro Wrestling Torch editor Wade Keller to see what, if anything, he wants to do on that day, perhaps an old show or just no show altogether. We'll have to see what he has in mind for that day. But those are the 2 weeks where I will be out, we'll have again a new episode for you next weekend, the 18th, but the 25th I wouldn't plan on tuning in at 8 p.m. Eastern for a brand new show for sure. Then we'll be back on the air Christmas Day evening, January 1st, 2023. I assume we'll be back on our regular schedule then, but of course, as with all Wrestling Night in America programming notes, stay tuned to my Twitter at Greg M. Parks for any details about those episodes that will be coming up. So right now, I'd like to welcome my co-host for this evening, and it is indeed PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn, who joins me tonight to discuss these big shows. Zach, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Hey, Greg, what's going on? It's great to be here, man. Super pumped. It was a busy night of wrestling, but some really good stuff to sink into. So this should be fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you didn't have the stress of having to watch the Bears. They were on a bye week this week, so you could catch up on all the wrestling and everything this afternoon and not have to worry about that. I mean, hey, as a Jaguars fan, like, the bye week is kind of my favorite week of the entire year because you don't have to worry about your team losing. Although I shouldn't say that they beat the first place Titans today, but historically speaking, that's kind of how I felt.
The Jaguars look good today. And you're right. Bye week is a great week as a Bear fan. Although this year, way too late. I need like Bears bye week to be like week 6, 7, maybe something like that. But good nonetheless. And yes, it's freed up the afternoon to catch up on these shows that I think both were, newsworthy in their own ways. It proved to be a fun afternoon with one screen the wrestling and then the other screen a little red zone action and stress-free football viewing. So it's been a good day.
Yeah. Well, I want to start off with some of that big news that you talked about, and it wasn't actually on the ROH card. It was afterward in the media scrum, Tony Khan revealing where people are going to be able to watch ROH weekly. He's been trying for the last year, really, since he purchased ROH, to find an outlet to show ROH on television weekly. We've been seeing it incorporated it into AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage. There's been a whole host of problems surrounding that and complaints from viewers about that. But he announced in the media session that ROH Honor Club, which is their streaming service, will be back, and it will be airing ROH weekly television for a subscription, $9.99 a month. And you'll also get along with that ROH pay-per-views, but 90 days after they air on pay-per-view. So, I think Tony kind of put on the best face he could for this news. Certainly not the news that he wanted. If he could have made money out of ROH by putting it on cable somewhere the same way that he's been able to do with Dynamite and Rampage, I'm sure he would have preferred that option. But, you know, this speaks to the landscape right now. There just doesn't seem to be appetite for Ring of Honor as a weekly television product on cable TV. So what do you make of this announcement? How big of a hit is it? You know, how big of an L is Tony Khan really taking here, and just kind of your overall impression of that announcement?
You know, so I think it's a pretty big L, to be frank, on two levels. Like, the first being, you know, he wanted a TV deal, just like anybody would. I mean, there's money being thrown all sorts of different directions on, you know, on live sports rights fees, and so he's thinking, okay, you know, that's we can make some money back on this and have another product and keep the ROH brand, you know, relevant and hot. And so that now that the fact that he's not going to have that, or all but conceding the fact that that's coming, at least in the near future, things can always change, you know, down the road, but in the near future, it's not happening. That's just like, you know, that's just the call it what it is. It's just, yeah, it's an L, you know, like you try to go and get it and try to do business that way. And it just doesn't work out. And so, okay, you pick up and you move on. The second L is what I'm more kind of little confused about and concerned about, and that is this Honor Club idea of, okay, well, now, you know, we were going to have Ring of Honor on television, and now if you want to see it, you're going to have to pay $9.99 a month to see the television, and then the pay-per-views, but you're getting those 90 days after. That's a big ask. I think that's a really big ask for Tony Khan to make for a fan base that, you know, like if you like the Ring of Honor product, you know, there's in all likelihood you have Tony Khan has them as viewers, you know, for his AEW product. It's not everybody, but I don't think that there's going to be a huge market of people that are going to say, oh, great, I'll just watch Ring of Honor now, because, you know, it's a brand that was very popular, and it was amongst, you know, diehard wrestling fans, and it's a brand that that right now has wrestlers on it that you can see in a variety of different places. And so, you know, to ask for $9.99 a month just for the television, and I know you get the back library. That's just a big ask, and I don't know what the market is for that type of thing. The library is important, and so I think that'll be a factor here. But the fact that, you know, Peacock subscription is $5.99 with commercials and $9.99 without, and you get, you know, all that extra WWE content, WWE library, WCW library, and all of the pay-per-views included in that, you know, that's just, I think just that's a tough spot in the market to be. So I think that's going to be the thing to watch, is how many people are going to bite on that, and what is Tony Khan going to do with Honor Club in terms of what they're offering to really make it worthwhile? Is there going to be specialized content there? You know, is there going to be documentary stuff on Ring of Honor or AEW? You know, he has to make it worth their while. That's the second L. And then the third thing that I think is interesting about the whole thing, and I'll stop rambling here, is just, you know, from the TV network perspective, the fact that, you know, he's not getting the TV deal here, I think it speaks to, like, a potential backfire on what Tony Khan's plan was as far as how they're going to handle the Ring of Honor thing in as it was for the last year. Because if you're like a TV network and you're looking at, like, how he's used Ring of Honor to this point, there's been a lot of crossover AEW stars to quote-unquote ROH. And it just would seem to me that if I'm a TV executive in the boardroom going, wait a minute, like, If I'm going to buy another hour of television from you, Tony Khan, I want it to be the more popular AEW brand. And you know, and like the stars are like almost the same anyway. So, okay, yeah, maybe I'll take it, but I don't want like the Ring of Honor letters on it. It's just not like, it doesn't have the same type of place in the market as as AEW does. There's not enough differentiation between those two brands at this point in time in 2022. And I think Tony Khan kind of led with, well, we're going to put big AEW stars on that show. Look at this. Watch this play out, and you're going to want this product. And I think that kind of backfired a little bit, that strategy, because, you know, AEW, as soon as it hit TNT in 2019, it became a bigger brand than ROH. And I wonder if he just put too much stock in what that company means in the broader, you know, in the broader world, and not just, you know, the pro wrestling addicts.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to pick at here from this announcement, and you touched on a lot of them there, Zach. Certainly, when you look at ROH and the pay-per-view thing, you know, could you offer pay-per-views on Honor Club in addition to Bleacher Report or BR Live? Or, you know, maybe BR Live has a deal with Tony Khan where they like contractually are not able to offer them on another service in the United States. So there could be some contractual things. You know, how many people are going to sign up for Honor Club to get a pay-per-view for $9.99 and then cancel right away? It's that old WWE Network thing, right? People sign up,
right,
and they forget to, you know, you just have so many services that you sign up for, you just forget and you let it lapse. And, you know, that pay-per-view is paid for in ROH terms in 4 months of subscription. So if you're someone signing up for ROH Honor Club and you stick with it, it takes 4 months to pay for that pay-per-view that you'd get otherwise, which,
yeah,
is, you know, seems like a reasonable, for if you're ROH, you know, that's not crazy to ask of fans, you know, to
mm-hmm.
do that. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people signing up for the pay-per-view and then not, and then, you know, canceling to kind of scam ROH out of that money or anything like that, as opposed to buying it for $40 on BR Live as a one-time thing. So, you know, there's that aspect of it. There's the weekly shows, which I don't think there was anything made of how they're taping it. I don't know if the expectation is that they're taping it alongside AEW in these arenas. I don't know if they're going to be standalone tapings. Are they going to be taping a bunch at a time? I know they do some Dark and Dark Elevation tapings here in Florida. I'm wondering if they'll rent out, you know, Universal or wherever it is they tape there and tape TV there. But, you know, you've got a whole roster of ROH stars. I'm wondering where that money is going to be coming from, because right now the only revenue stream seems to be the $9.99 Honor Club, which, you know, I can't imagine there's going to be just a ton of people signing up for that, at least right away. So, you know, and if you tape at, say, Universal and you're not going on the road, which in and of itself is a whole other set of expenses, you're also not getting ticket
right.
revenue. And if you're the folks in AEW, you know, you're the wrestlers in AEW, is there concern that Tony Khan is going to be using some money that he's making from AEW and using it to spend on ROH? You know, I think that's a
yep.
valid concern from people within AEW. And then the other thing is, you wonder just how much the ROH brand has been damaged. You know, if you are a television executive and you are hearing a pitch by Tony Khan tomorrow about ROH and you know nothing about it, and you go on social media and, you know, you do an ROH search, what are you going to come up with? You're going to come up with people complaining
right.
about ROH being on AEW TV. So, you know, you do wonder how much damage has been done to the brand by having it be on AEW TV, which on one hand is great because it gives it exposure to a wide audience. But on the other hand, you have a lot of AEW fans who might otherwise be ROH fans who just got sick and tired of it being a part of their AEW TV viewership and that AEW TV
yeah.
experience. And so, you know, I look at this situation and it's hard for me to see how Tony Khan sort of makes this ROH brand into something more than it was when he bought it.
That's good stuff. I mean, you're totally right on multiple fronts. Like, what I always thought was missing was, you know, you're trying to, like, he tried to present like Ring of Honor like on the level of AEW-ish, you know? Or at least it's just what it felt like for a while. And everybody who knows Ring of Honor knows that it's not on an equal level. And, you know,
masquerade. You know, that's not a huge problem. That the people who like ROH, in some respects, like it because it is this underground niche thing. And yes, Tony Khan would love to sell it to a network and make a ton of money and have it on par with AEW, but I just don't think that was ever realistic.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And so my thing is, what I always thought would be a good idea for him as far as the ROH product went was to just kind of start over. And I think he's in a position to do it now where, like, I think the $9.99 for the weekly television is going to end up being a big mistake. Like, that TV, quote-unquote, really should be, like, the entry point into whatever this new Ring of Honor is under Tony Khan. And I think you have to make that more accessible to people for the product to grow. Because, look, it's not – he's not getting a television deal right now, but if the product is strong and he grows it year over year over year for 3 years, and you know, buy rates increase on pay-per-views and viewership increases on your weekly programming, you can take those numbers to a TV company and go, hey, look, we did this on our own. This is the results. What do you think? Plus, you actually have like an actual ROH specific product to show the television buyers, so they know exactly what it is they're getting. Right now, it's like this pseudo ROH is involved in AEW type thing, and it's all really confusing. Well, if you just get TV going and get it good and make it consistent and make it interesting, like then you can say to somebody like, "Look, this is the product. This is what it is, and here it is." I think that they're trying to just bite off more than they can chew at this point. If it were me and I got shot down for the TV deal, I think I would just start very much like NWA power. Like here's a regular YouTube show. It's going to be on YouTube. You know, Tony Khan records YouTube shows weekly anyway. Here's the product. Here's what it is on a week to week basis. And then you build up to those pay-per-views. And when, by the way, if you want the full back catalog, here's this sleek new Honor Club streaming service where you guys can pick up stuff on that, and you promote that on your pay-per-views, you promote that on AEW, you can promote that on your ROH TV. It's just, I think they just went a little too strong, too fast with this brand, and now you're kind of stuck, and they're going to try to make some money off it, but I think it's a break it down to the studs type thing and build up first. It doesn't seem like he's going that way, but that's what I would do, because I just don't think you're going to have a market for people that want to pay $9.99 for, you know, AEW, what's essentially AEW 3.0.
And there is nothing to say that Tony Khan can't continue to shop ROH while it airs on Honor Club. I mean, I think Khan's perfect vision, you know, he airs one episode of ROH weekly TV on Honor Club, and then someone picks it up, right? You know, so he doesn't have to.
Yep.
This is not something Tony Khan wanted to do. I think it's just I think he acknowledged finally that you kind of come to the end of the road with how much ROH you can present on AEW TV, and he needed somewhere to put it. He already kind of trashed, but talk down about the potential of ROH being on YouTube at a media scrum or in an interview at one point, saying that, you know, ROH deserved better than being on YouTube. So he would have had to really walk back that comment if he was going to put it on YouTube. But you're right. You know, it's a barrier to entry for new fans. You know, new fans are not going to just stumble across Ring of Honor when they're at $9.99 on a streaming service specific to this brand. So that's going to be very difficult to grow the product beyond the audience it has now, and that's going to be a huge problem too, unless it's just a way for him to tape some shows and to be able to take those tapes to networks and say, this is my vision for ROH. Here is an actual weekly product that we shot. This is what it's going to look like. Because like you said, he doesn't have that right now. He has pieces
right.
of it that have aired on AEW TV, but he doesn't have a vision of ROH to actually present to someone at a network in physical form and say, this is it, this is what it's going to look like. So, you know, I think this is not what Tony Khan wanted. He fell into this. I think he realized and understood that ROH could not continue to be a weekly presence on AEW. It was damaging to AEW. It was damaging in some respects to ROH. And he needed to get it out there on its own. It's been a year, and that may have been his deadline to himself to say, you know, if I don't get it in a year, I've got to figure out an alternative if I don't get that TV deal. So that appears to be what has happened. Oh, by the way, there was actually a pay-per-view on Saturday as well of ROH, which has kind of taken a back seat in some ways to the news. But I want to go to the phones first, and Reverend Keith is on the air, and I know he'll help guide us because, whenever we do these kinds of shows, he'll pick and choose some matches that he wants to talk about, and I can kind of cross them off our list, and we can go over the other ones. So, Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Thank you for taking my call, gentlemen. I wanted to shed some light on what you and Zach was discussing, being a former Honor Club member. When Sinclair owned the rights to ROH, basically as an Honor Club member, if you were paying the $9.99 subscription fee, you had exclusive rights to all pay-per-views, as well as they would broadcast house shows, and you would see the back shows or the you could see the most recent airings of ROH TV, because back then it was being broadcast on Sinclair. So I truly understand what you and Zach was just discussing about the fact that maybe Tony Khan went in above his head or was trying to do a little too much too soon, because to ask the ROH faithful to pay $9.99 just for the current TV product is a bit much compared to what it used to offer. So I just wanted to chime in on that and, shed some light on it. So I understand what you guys are saying. Only time will tell. I mean, it's interesting because, as you said, they haven't even disclosed when, where, or how the weekly TVs will be broadcast. So I'm curious to know when that will be mentioned. Has any mention of it at all been discussed, Zach?
No, I've not heard any mention of they've mentioned, hey, you're going to be able to watch ROH TV on this, but nothing more than that. No how or where or why, none of that. Just basically that we're going to have TV and it's going to be on Honor Club. But that's the only detail that there's been.
Okay. Now, I literally just watched the end of this show because I didn't get a chance to see either show on Saturday due to my work schedule. I was truly impressed with Ring of Honor, to say the least. It was an electric crowd. It was the most watched Ring of Honor final battle ever. It was the I think it was the highest attendance, although I was in attendance here in Baltimore in two of the last seven that they've had here. One was at the R.J. Myers Pavilion in Glen Burnie, and the most recent one, 2019, was well attended at the now Chesapeake Employees Insurance Arena, and they were well attended. But this was a good show. I just saw the ending of the ROH world title match between Claudio and Chris Jericho. I was surprised that they went with that finish, being that Claudio has placed numerous opponents both in WWE and in AEW and ROH in this spin. And referee Paul Turner stopped the match. What were your thoughts on the finish to this main event?
I could see how people would consider it a little too cute for the reasons you mentioned, Reverend Keith. I think the factors that go into this specific one is Claudio swung Jericho, I think, for more revolutions than he usually does for guys. And I think you also have to take into account, you know, in storyline terms, it was very late in the match. Jericho may have been a little more worn down than some opponents that Claudio has done this to. So that's a factor. But, yeah, I mean, I can totally understand not liking the finish. I think they did say Jericho submitted. I think they mentioned that. So I don't think it was a straight-up ref stoppage, the way that we've become accustomed to those finishes in professional wrestling. But, yeah, I can see how it was very sudden. You know, you don't expect it. But I think there's value in that. You know, this is not just a move to count along with. Now, Zach, they've set it up as a move where you have to be paying attention because somebody could end up submitting it, could turn into a submission move. What did you think about the finish to Jericho and Claudio in the main event?
So I liked it. I liked the finish. And one of the reasons was for what you just mentioned. It keeps people on their toes and, you know, reminds them that, you know, matches can end at any time, you know. And I think it's especially valuable in that type of environment, like the ROH-AW match-style environment, because in that environment, you have fans that watch a lot of wrestling. They've seen these guys. They know what to expect when it comes to their matches. And so you can kind of, like, throw a curveball like this that resonates because they're not – that those audiences aren't expecting it. So I liked it for that reason. But I also really liked it from the Claudio perspective. And the reason I say that is because Claudio's a really good in-ring worker, and I think he's a good guy to kind of hold down the fort as at the top of this new Ring of Honor brand. But when you look at, like, what he does, like his big move in all the matches is this one. It's the swing, but it really didn't carry any weight outside of, like, a fun counting chant, you know, for his whole career when he started to do that. And so I like now that it can be, you know, it'll keep people ready for it to actually be a finish to his matches. And it's so instead of it just being like a gimmick that he pulls out, it's something that I can actually win him like title matches. It can win him, you know, big time feuds. I like that he can play that card and not just have it be this kind of like, all right, everybody's going to count to 20 now. Like the move matters more. And I think that's really important for him if he's going to be, you know, carrying that brand. So thumbs up. I thought it was good. Did it border on the line of too cute? Yes, but I don't think it crossed it. And so in this case, thumbs up.
All right, Reverend Keith, back to you for your second question or comment for us tonight.
Yes, I was glad that Ring of Honor placed the ROH women's strap on Athena. I had stated last week that I thought that they may keep the feud going, but I was wrong. And it I think it will prove dividends placing the strap on Athena while she's red hot. And I heard part of the media scrum where she spoke highly of her route to Ring of Honor and how her and Mercedes had wrestled over in Shimmer, which I happened to see one of those matches years ago. And she was in and out of character. You know, she was basically stating that now that she's at the top, that all roads lead to her as far as the women in the division, and that, you know, she was proud of all her many accomplishments, and she felt that the reason why she didn't make it in WWE was because they specialize more in entertainment, and here she's able to wrestle and define her character, which is true. So what were your thoughts on that match? I thought that it was a well-worked match. However, to me, Mercedes Martinez has cooled off a lot over the past year since she's been out with injury.
Yeah, I think for sure. Through no fault of her own, as you mentioned, being out with injury, that's going to cool anyone off. You know, if you're not on TV, if you're not a weekly presence, especially with the women that have been added and who've come back from injury, you know, Ruby Soho's back. They've added Athena into a major spot. Jamie Hayter has really stood out more lately. Tony Storm was added in the last year. So when that happens, and if you're not a constant TV presence among that AEW/ROH women's division, yeah, it's gonna you're gonna fall behind a little bit. I like the match, and I liked the decision to go with Athena here. They found something in Athena in terms of a character that sort of happenstance based on something that happened at a Dark Elevation taping, and AEW and Athena wisely sort of pounced on that and made it a big part of her character. And I think, you know, she was somebody who was really getting lost in the shuffle. She had, you know, as most people do when they come from WWE, she had that bump right away in AEW when she came in. But, you know, she sort of started floundering not long after that. And there wasn't really anything definable about her character in AEW until this situation came along. And I like Athena. I think she has a lot of promise, so I'm glad that they found something for her to do, and it does, Zach, feel like the right time to go with her here as the ROH Women's Champion.
It definitely does. It definitely does. And I thought the match was good, too. Mercedes Martinez is – she is cold. I mean, like, not only has she been out due to injury, but, like, there hasn't been a place for a lot of ROH talent including, you know, the ROH Women's Champion. And so even though she could come back, like, she just hasn't had a place to kind of make herself hot again. And so for that reason alone, I think it was smart to change the belt here just to kind of inject some life into that division. But Athena's absolutely the right choice to go to. I think she's somebody that is, you know, like didn't have a hot run in AEW, but I don't know that was severely, like, defined down either. It's not like she was out there taking, like, a ton of losses, and you know, she just didn't have that type of stigma. You add in on the other side of it that she's a well-known name. I mean, people know her from WWE. She can work. She can have good matches. She's kind of like exactly what you'd be looking for. In a lot of ways, she's like a Cesaro of the women's division, just not with as long of a career, but somebody that has the skill set, just hasn't really had the platform and haven't really been able to click on all cylinders. And this is a good opportunity for her to show that she can do that. And so, like he'll do at the top of the men's division, like, this is a good opportunity for her to stake her claim at the top of that ROH women's division. And if she shows she can do it there, then, you know, the door, I'm sure, is going to be open for AEW. But yeah, this is a no-brainer. I thought this was a good call. It was a good match, and it came at the right time because she's kind of developing a little bit of an edge and a new character too. So I like this move a lot.
And if you're someone who maybe checks out ROH every once in a while, is not that familiar with some of the talent, she certainly came off as a big star here. It was in her hometown or home area, and the crowd was pretty well behind her. So she got a good reaction and came across as a star because of that. So I think that helps springboard her into ROH's weekly TV as its champion. Reverend Keith, back to you for your final question or comment for us tonight.
Yes, and then moving further down the card, I would certainly be remiss if I didn't mention the intensity, the athleticism, the passion, the endurance, and the overall story that was told during the double dog collar ROH World Tag Team title match. I have followed ROH since its inception. I know many of the guys personally. I saw the Briscoe brothers rise in this promotion. And let me tell you something. That was, to me, in my opinion, a five-star match. It will go down as not only one of the better matches of this year, but also it will go down as probably one of the best ever dog collar matches. Now, we know about Piper and Valentine, but this, as far as it was a banger, as we say nowadays, it was a banger. And for, you know, I would recommend people ordering the show or the replay just for that match. That match was excellent. It was well booked, and both teams brought it. You know, sure, it was bloody, but you knew going in it was going to be a bloody and brutal battle with the dog collars involved. But I'm going to tell you, these two teams, they cannot have a bad match. All three matches that they have had this year have been bangers. This definitely was a five-star match. Give me your thoughts on this match. Thank you, Zach and Greg, for taking my call. Have a blessed week and have a good Christmas season. Greg, I know you're going on vacation, and we'll talk when you return. God bless you.
All right. Thank you, Reverend Keith. Always
thanks,
appreciate
Keith.
You calling in, and same to you, certainly. Have a wonderful holiday season. Yeah, Zach, this was a match of the year contender. Match of the year candidate for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be in the conversation in just a few weeks, by the way, because the year is coming to a close. So just when you look at a dog collar match, you look for the violence, you look for the brutality. This match had that in spades. And so because of that, because of the blood, you know, there are going to be some people, this match is just not for them because they don't enjoy that aspect of wrestling. But I think for the majority of people who came up and who for, you know, blood was a common element of professional wrestling matches at one time. So if you're part of that era and it's kind of almost accepted use in professional wrestling, this is going to be near the top of your list for match of the year for this year. And, you know, it's interesting because FTR is in a spot right now where there are rumors that they may be heading elsewhere. You know, I don't know what their contract status is, but, you know, rumblings that perhaps WWE would be interested in bringing them back, and they may have some interest in that as well. So if this is a match that they go out on, certainly in ROH, having lost the titles here, then absolutely something they can be proud of. But, Zach, Briscoes and FTR, are we heaping too much praise on this match, or are you right there with us as far as it being a match of the year contender?
No, I don't, you're not heaping too much praise at all. I thought, yeah, this is just really an incredible match. I mean, and I liked it for just the aggression and the intensity and all that. Like, there's, you know, that's part of it, right? And the blood. But I thought that, like, I don't know if this is the right way to say it, but I thought that the blood was done in, like, oh, man, I don't have the right word, but maybe I can explain what I mean. But it was done in, like, a tasteful way. Like, this wasn't, to me, like,
it was
egregious,
classy,
like,
blood.
Death match. Yeah. Well, kind of, yeah. Like, it wasn't, like, egregious, like death match, you know, pizza cutter to the forehead blood. Like,
yeah.
There was more of a story here. I think there was more of, like, they were able to, like, just kind of show the passion for tag team wrestling and – they were, like, the commentary I thought was really good at highlighting that and like, pointing out that these guys are, like, I know, like, I think it was Caprice Coleman at one point who was like, I know these guys. I know their kids. I know their families. They know each other. And they're you know, fighting for the richest prize in the game. So, like, there was really a lot of meaning behind what they did. And it wasn't just blood for the sake of blood. And I think more often than not, like, that's when blood gets a thumbs up from me. Can it enhance the story? And I think it very much did here. Plus, you had some really good psychology, some really good unique stuff with dog collars. You know, Mark Briscoe, I thought in particular was great and took some insane bumps. But, like, just some of the stuff that he did, I just think was wild and crazy. And then, you know, afterwards, the respect that they were able to show each other. Like, that was kind of a good fitting end to their trilogy and their story. And that to me is, like, just right up my alley in terms of what I like about pro wrestling. This had it all. It had the spots. It had the storytelling. It had the intensity. It had high stakes on the line. Like, right there, you know, you have that in place and then you deliver on it with the match. That's great stuff. And I think it's so hard to believe that, like, each time I think that they were able to up their game on the match they had previous when really there's no, like, reasonable expectation that they should have been able to do that. Like, they had a great match at Supercard of Honor and then ran it back at Death Before Dishonor 2 out of 3 falls and had, I think, a better match than the one previous. And then same thing here. This was definitely different than that Death Before Dishonor match, but I thought it was more entertaining and more complete from a storytelling perspective. My question when I was finished watching this, though, Greg, and I'm wondering if it kind of stuck out to you too, was, like, what do you do with these two teams? Like, there's these two teams in ROH anyway, and then there is a pretty large drop-off, you know, after that in terms of, like, where these guys can go next. I mean, FTR, of course, can go to AEW and work there. But even there, it's like, you know, you come out of this type of match and this type of feud that's lasted all year long, you know, like, you're going to go to the, like, the gun club now? That just seems like really, like, a few steps down. And with the Briscoes, it may be even worse because there's just not a lot of made teams on that ROH roster right now that are on the level of FTR as opponents. So I don't know what that means for them in the future, but if I'm Tony Khan and, like, you know, I'm going to have the Briscoes on my TV, like, I think you got to lean into them and make them, like, a centerpiece act at this point in time for Ring of Honor, because I think you can make an argument that they're, you know, bigger stars for that brand than even Claudio at this point.
And FTR, rather the Briscoes, don't have the luxury that FTR does of just moving over to AEW and, you know, going after the tag titles or using this series of matches and this match in particular as a springboard for something more. You know, they are stuck, for lack of a better term, in Ring of Honor because they're not allowed on Turner TV. So it's even more of a problem for them, I think, than FTR. But, yeah, you know, they – in leaving it all out on the table like that kind of makes you wonder what's next. And I don't know how AEW contracts are structured. We know that AEW has a glut of tag teams to the point where some of them may not be getting the television time they deserve or they expect. Would they be able to move to ROH? And that way you're not cobbling together ROH tag teams or, you know, you're not you know, bringing a new tag team in that people aren't familiar with and asking people to expect them to go toe-to-toe with the Briscoes, who they just saw in a match of the year candidate. So there could be some transition of AEW tag teams to ROH to beef that division up and to give the Briscoes really some real competition. Because outside of FTR, you know, are you going to say, you know, the Gates of Agony? I mean, really, that doesn't seem like, you know, Briscoe's Gates of Agony. I don't see it, you know. Even like Dalton Castle and the boys, not really on the same level, I don't think. So I think that is something that Tony Khan's going to work through when he sort of builds his depth chart for what he wants ROH to look like before that first TV. You know, one thing he's going to have to look at is the tag teams. Where are they going to come from? And how do you make sure that the Briscoes aren't sort of lost out on an island unto themselves simply because they just don't have the competition?
Yeah, 1,000%. And it's not even that those teams are bad. It's just that this has been such an epic feud that it just feels that they're just way less, and it's not that they're not talented. It's just the presentation is just nowhere close to the same level. Yeah, he's gonna have to worry about that on a lot of fronts, I think. You know, even when you look at, you know, Claudio and who's next for him or Joe's next opponent. Like, not that they've really had hot ones, but for Claudio, it's like, you know, you had Chris Jericho on the other side of the ring. I mean, like, and Chris Jericho at 50,
and
whatever.
And that's a good example, Zach, because you could, you know, this past year when ROH was being presented on AEW TV, you could use AEW talent as challengers to these ROH titles. But if ROH is going to be its separate thing and air on TV separately, you know, is it going to be as easy to do that? Are you going to even want to do that if you're Tony Khan and have those AEW wrestlers move over to ROH? You know, I don't know about that.
Exactly. Yeah. And he kind of said that he's not going to want that. He said that in his pre-final battle scrum that, like, he's planning on, you know, obviously, like, toning down the ROH on AEW and vice versa. So, yeah, he's going to have to figure that out. I mean, there's no doubt.
Well, if you want to be like Reverend Keith and call in and talk about either Final Battle or Deadline, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. WNIA Livecast at gmail.com is where you can send any emails. with your thoughts on these if you're listening live. Let's dive right back into Final Battle, Zach. We'll go through match by match, then we'll hit deadline. This opener was AR Fox and Blake Christian over Roosh and Dralistico. The heels laid out the baby faces in the post-match. Good match. I think it was marred by a finish that went awry, perhaps. I'm not sure if that was how it was supposed to go down, but, you know, remains to be seen. AR Fox is a guy I've liked for a long time. It's been hard to believe that up until this point, the only time he's really had a major role on national television was with Lucha Underground. He seemed like for a long time the kind of guy when NXT was dipping into the indies that he was a guy that would be brought into NXT and never was. Blake Christian, former NXT wrestler himself, former Impact wrestler, brought in here. So this kind of reminded me of the old, you know, when Impact would start their pay-per-views, and they still do some of them, with the X Division match. You know, kind of get things off to a high-flying start, really athletic start. This is kind of what it reminded me of here.
I agree. I thought it was a good match. The finish was clearly, you know, not what they had going, what they had planned. The whole time I was thinking, oh God, Roosh is going to do something. He's going to take liberties. His team just did the job on accident. Blake Christian, get out of there, man. Well, get out of there while you stand. No, but you know, I mean, yeah, it was clearly they messed up the end, but I thought the match was pretty good. And it was. It was a good kind of like, you know, like you mentioned, like a X Division in this case, you know, mid-card ROH style match. Like you say X Division, I kind of remember back in like the 05, 06 days where they would have like a lot of Fatal 4-Way matches on the ROH shows that you could pick up like on DVD. And this obviously wasn't a Fatal 4-Way, but it was similar in terms of like the style and the pace, the moves, and the level of talent too. So, a good opener. And I think they got the crowd rolling, and that's, you know, that's the point. So, I like this.
We talked about Athena versus Mercedes Martinez already. We'll go to match three. Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland defeating Shane Taylor and J.D. Griffey when Strickland walked out on Lee this time, which was the opposite at the AEW pay-per-view, yet Keith Lee was able to get the victory. Some really impressive moves here. Keith Lee catching Shane Taylor out of midair has to be seen to be believed, I think. But, you know, this was hampered, in my opinion, by Keith Lee willingly taking Strickland back after walking out on him at Revolution. I didn't really buy that. It didn't really make a lot of sense to me. And then Keith Lee looks even worse by going back to Strickland, basically taking him back and then having Strickland walk out on him. I know they picked up the win, so he saves face a little bit, but I thought Revolution was really the perfect end to this somewhat unique relationship that Keith Lee and Strickland had going on. You know, so that kind of bothered me a bit. And then you wonder, you know, Shane Taylor, is he going to be, he's been an ROH guy for a long time. Is he going to stay in ROH? Is he and Keith Lee going to get back together? Like, what, you know, Keith Lee's an AEW guy. You got an ROH guy and an AEW guy, former tag team. Makes sense to try to put them together. But how is that going to work now that they're on separate shows? So just a lot going on for me mentally and emotionally, Zach, in this one.
Yeah, this one was fine, I think, is where I'm at with it. I really like the interaction that Lee and Shane Taylor had. Mm-hmm. I really thought those were fun. And if you kind of play the match back in your head, they served as like that story served as like multiple anchor points for the match, almost more so than the Swerve and Lee stuff did. So I like that, but I had the same question that you did, Greg, going through your head, which was, you know, okay, so they're having this cool thing, this cool moment, the crowd's eating it up, there's chemistry there, but there's no way to, you know, magnify that any further because, like, Keith Lee is an AEW talent. And so the only thing I can think of is just that, okay, this is just a one-off, and this is just a fun match for this pay-per-view that needed some oomph to it. And, you know, come Wednesday, they move on with the Keith Lee and Swerve story, and we don't really see, you know, much about Shane Taylor Promotions and Keith Lee again. And I don't – I mean, it's probably the right call if you want to split make sure that these brands are split. But when I'm watching those two together, it's like, nah, Shane Taylor has to be around Keith Lee. Like, I think he brought out, he helped bring out more charisma in Keith Lee than we've seen on AEW television, like, yet. I thought that was really notable. And so to kind of recognize that, okay, they've got this thing and it's really not going to go anywhere is a bit of a bummer. And if I'm Tony Khan and I'm backstage and I'm watching that, I'm going, all right, wait a minute here. Maybe we need to change things up, because that was as hot as Keith Lee has seemed to me after his debut.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Keith Lee, who knows? You know, he may see it as a step back. Like, he wants to be a big single star, as anyone would want to. You know, he's gotten a little bit of taste of that in WWE and to a lesser extent AEW. Would he feel like that's kind of falling back a little bit by returning to a tag team with Shane Taylor, even if it's AEW, even if it's not ROH, where they team up? So, you know, I can totally understand that as well. Match number four, Brian Cage and the Gates of Agony defeated Dalton Castle and the Boys to win the ROH six-man tag titles, one of a number of titles that changed hands on this show as Tony Khan sort of reshuffles the deck to get ready for ROH's weekly television on Honor Club. This match felt like it was transported and dropped into this pay-per-view from a different dimension. It just felt so different than everything else, and I don't mean that as a compliment. It just felt like almost a ghost of ROH past, I don't know, for this match. And Dalton Castle, like, I like him. I like what he's done. I think he can be very valuable, but he almost has that, I don't want to say stench, because that's a negative, but in some ways that old ROH stench, to where you've seen former ROH guys like him go on to AEW and have tremendous amount of success. Dalton Castle just hasn't. And so it felt different, not in a great way, and Dalton Castle felt like a relic of ROH past, not in a great way. You know, the match was fine, but I didn't think it fit with the rest of the card.
Totally agree. Yeah, this is probably my least favorite thing on the show. And I'm not a big Dalton Castle fan. I think he's a guy who had his time, you know, to be on top and had just such a hot act, and you know, Ring of Honor went with that for as long as they could at that time. But I don't think it's something that really has shown to have the staying power that other types of, like, legacy brand acts have had. So you add that into it, and it just kind of was, I thought it was a little flat. It certainly had its moments from an in-ring perspective. And I think, you know, resetting the table with those titles is a good idea, just to kind of, to keep them, not just to freshen them up with a new look. I mean, they're not going to be any, you know, major selling point for that brand, as far as, like, oh my gosh, we have to go see the Embassy, you know, wrestle and see somebody take those Trios titles off of them. Like, I don't get that. That's the sense of where they're going, obviously. But it's good to put a fresh coat of paint sometimes, especially with titles like that that really don't have a lot of meaning behind them. So I think the booking decision here was the right way to go, and the match was what it was. But it was exactly what it was, in that it was like a lower level, middle of the show, bathroom break kind of match. And yeah, I didn't love it, but every show needs that kind of thing too.
Yeah. Next up was Wheeler Yuta defeating Daniel Garcia via ref stoppage to win the ROH Pure title. This is one of my favorite matches on this show. Probably after Briscoe's versus FTR. I don't watch a lot of UFC or MMA, but I felt like this is the kind of match that Ian Riccaboni and Caprice Coleman, it really brings out the best in them as a duo, as an announced duo. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, you know, if I closed my eyes at some points, it would have sounded like I was watching an MMA fight, the way they called this match. I really enjoyed the story of the rope breaks early on used by Yuta. and Daniel Garcia kind of forcing him to do that. I thought that was really well done, and the match was really good. I really enjoyed it. You know, you could say Daniel Garcia has lost some steam a little bit since he returned to the Jericho Appreciation Society after teasing the turn. Wheeler Yuta, who knows what's going to happen with the Blackpool Combat Club now that William Regal has apparently left for WWE. But in a vacuum, this match was really good, and it was one of my favorites on the show.
This was one of the better pure title matches that there have been since the title was reintroduced 2 years ago, I think, 2020, like peak pandemic 2020. It was a really good match. I agree. The story that they told in regards to the rope breaks was well done. The rope breaks are a major kind of selling point and differentiation point for pure title matches. And a lot of times I think that you don't get enough of emphasis around those special rules with these matches. Like, you can see a lot of great mat wrestling and some really cool chain stuff, but you haven't, or at least I haven't, I can't point to like a really concrete example of, okay, like they're really leaning into the special rules here and therefore highlighting why the pure division is different than just like the regular world title. And I thought if you were a first-time viewer of the ROH product and the pure product, this match was a really good entry point into that division, because not only did it showcase some of that style, a lot of that style, but it also really played up the rules and told a story and had a narrative that just was completely built around them. So I thought this was good. Daniel Garcia is a guy that is another guy that kind of is like on an Athena level almost in terms of like what I think he could mean to the ROH brand. Like, he's a guy that I think has a lot of potential. He can talk. He can obviously wrestle. He'd be somebody that I look at and go, okay, who on this roster can we tell, like, you know, an 18-month story around his quest for the world title, you know? And that probably means he has to break away from the Jericho Appreciation Society again, and I get that. But I think he has value to Ring of Honor in that role. Like, a lot like some of the original champions of Ring of Honor were, like the Lokis of the world. And Samoa Joe at his time was, you know, this – the ROH world title reign, like, made the company, but made Samoa Joe too when he held the belt. And I think – you know, Daniel Garcia on a similar kind of run can really, I think, position him in a much stronger light and give people a reason to tune in to Ring of Honor to see him, like, overcome odds and climb the ladder and win that title. But he's somebody that would be on my short list of, like, okay, who are we building this brand around? I know he doesn't have the pure title anymore. Maybe there's a reason for that. He'd be one of the faces of that brand if it was up to me, I think.
Samoa Joe and Juice Robinson had the unenviable task of following the Briscoes versus FTR, and they wrestled like it, you know,
yep.
Joe defeating Juice to retain the TV title. I was actually looking forward to this match, and I think on any other card, we could be talking about this potentially as a match of the night candidate, but this wasn't their night. And I mean, sometimes that's just the way it is. That was not their role. Their role was to sort of bring the crowd down before the main event after a very emotionally draining and physically draining, at least for the wrestlers, but hopefully not for the fans, FTR versus Briscoe's match. And, you know, I think sometimes that come-down match is a bit overblown. You know, I do wonder how often companies – have that in mind when they structure their card, especially these days. I feel like you could have pointed to that a lot more commonly in a different era. But boy, if there was one, this was it. And I kind of felt bad because I thought, like I said, on any other night, this would have been a potential match of the night candidate, but that was not their role tonight.
It was not their role. And you're right. They certainly acted like it was not their role. But I also think they had a tough task anyway. Like, even if they were put into a position where, hey, you're not going to be the come down match and you're going to be, you know, we want you to go on first, or we want, you know, to go on middle of the show in like the FTR Frisco spot or something. I just, it was really hard to get into what they were doing because of the severe lack of story, number one, and really between their lack of a story going into this from a build perspective and just the reality of, you know, that Juice is just not going to win this match. Like, as hard as you guys try out there, like, you know, nobody, I think, really thought that the match was in dispute as far as who was going to take it home. And that makes it really hard to, like, sell meaningful drama in your matches as well. So you add that into the fact that they were following two very good matches in the matches of the night. They really had no shot. And that the result was exactly that. So yeah, not good. I think they kind of, what do you think about Samoa Joe, you know, in Ring of Honor at this time, Greg? Because I obviously it makes sense from the perspective of, okay, he's got history there, but at the same time, you watch the match that he had with Darby Allin on Dynamite, and I'm thinking to myself, man, there's things he has to do on that show with a bigger audience and better talent. I hope that he's not stuck in ROH long term just for like the nostalgia effect. I think he just can bring more in AEW. And I'm not breaking any news here. I don't know whether or not that's the case. But he was on the show. He does hold the ROH TV title. So I just hope that there's that he's not there just for nostalgia purposes.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think that, I mean, you have to remember, Samoa Joe was an announcer in WWE just a few years ago. I mean, his in-ring career was basically all but over. And I do agree that match with Darby Allin was really good. They had a really good chemistry together. I do wonder how much of that is Darby Allin as the smaller wrestler bouncing around for someone like Samoa Joe. You know, but I think in terms of where is Samoa Joe's value to Tony Khan right now, I think he's much more valuable in ROH, even taking away the nostalgia for Samoa Joe in ROH and the history he has there. I think he can do a lot more in ROH than he can in AEW. You know, we talk at length about AEW's stacked roster and how the mid-card has really been stunted because of the use of ROH on television. And so I think, you know, if you were to take Samoa Joe and put him in AEW, unfortunately, I think he falls pretty far down the ladder, even for as talented as he still is. Whereas in ROH, I think he can accomplish more and he can be, you know, using the old term we used for ECW, a bigger fish in a small pond in ROH than a small pond, a small fish in a big pond as he would be in AEW. I'm not really sure how much time, as deserved as he would be to get it, how much time he would really have to develop and to really sink his teeth into a program like he deserves if he stayed in AEW.
Yeah, I guess more what I'm worried about is, like, if he's there and he's working and, like, he's the central part of the story, then, like, I think I'd be okay with that. But I guess where I get, like, I'm like, I don't know that I'm interested in a Samoa Joe, like, is he the college kid at the high school party, you know what I mean, where it's like he's just there to kind of relive the glory days of ROH. That's where I'm like, eh. But if he's going to, like, have a run like you just kind of outlined, then I think that would be something that I'd be more interested in seeing. I guess I just don't want it I don't want the nostalgia just for the nostalgia's sake. I hope there's a little more meaning behind it, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, for sure. The main event, Claudio Castagnoli defeating Chris Jericho to win the ROH title. Perhaps that's why they didn't reveal the plans for ROH TV on this pay-per-view like they had promised to do, because the rumors had long been that Chris Jericho was ROH champion as a way for Tony Khan to try to kind of sell a big name, a visible name, to these television networks as being ROH champion. Once it was, you know, it would have been revealed that Honor Club is where ROH TV would reside, perhaps people would have said, oh, well, I guess Jericho doesn't need to be champion anymore, you know? So
yep.
Maybe there was a little of that going into this as well. But certainly you wouldn't expect with ROH TV being on Honor Club for Chris Jericho to be used in that way. And Claudio, I think, is a good guy to lead it. I mean, we're all looking at the results here now from the perspective of these are the wrestlers who are going to take this product into weekly television on Honor Club. So you want to have wrestlers that people are going to be willing to pay $9.99 a month to see wrestle weekly. And I think Claudio Castagnoli, despite the way he was booked in WWE, people still have a soft spot for him. They like him. They enjoy his work. They enjoy his character. They're okay with his mediocre mic skills. And so, I guess when you're looking at the guys who AEW would have as part of ROH, Claudio is as good of a name as any to be leading that brand into this new era.
He absolutely is. He absolutely is. He's got, you know, enough name value where he'll probably, you know, if people do find Ring of Honor, he will stop some folks and go, hey, wait a minute, I know that guy. He's also really good in the ring, so he fits with the Ring of Honor brand and the style of show that it's going to be. He's also not somebody that has a clear-cut role in AEW right now. And so Tony Khan, because of that, can easily move him over to Ring of Honor as the flag bearer of that show without really losing a lot on Wednesday nights either. And I think on top of that, if he's off Dynamite for enough time and has a good enough run as the Ring of Honor World Champion, bringing him back to AEW, either for like a one-off match for the Blackpool Combat Club or just, you know, okay, he's going to be on AEW now regularly, I think he's going to mean more in that instance too, because he's had that time away and isn't just like, you know, kind of hiding in the shadows on that show. So this is a good thing. This is a good guy, I think, to kind of be the guy for your show, you know, going into whatever the future is going to be. I struggle to find somebody better on a short list. Like Daniel Garcia, I made that point before, but you also want to tell that story in a broader sense. So I look around with who Tony Khan has to like put this title on and put the company on, and I think he's as good a choice as you're going to get at this period of time without sacrificing, you know, top talent that need to be wrestling for him on Wednesdays.
Greg Parks and Zach Haydorn here on Wrestling Night in America for December 11th. Just got finished going down the ROH Final Battle Show. We'll be talking about NXT Deadline coming up, 515-605-9345. If you'd like to call in and talk live, wnialivecast@gmail.com is where you can email us anytime, and we'll discuss those emails. We got an email that we'll talk about after we talk Deadline that kind of sums up the Saturday of wrestling and looks at everything as a whole. So I do want to move into Deadline. They had a very unique match that they introduced here called the Iron Survivor Challenge. Two of the matches on the card, one women's match, one men's match, was featured here. And I'm going to be writing my column in the upcoming Torch newsletter about this match and how it kind of folds into WWE's history of creating new matches. They haven't done a lot of that lately. So this is sort of unique in that way. Roxanne Perez ended up winning the Iron Survivor Challenge. She becomes the number one contender to the NXT Women's Championship held currently by Mandy Rose. She defeated Indy Hartwell, Kiana James, Zoe Stark, and Cora Jade. Zach, just want to get your thoughts overall first on the Iron Survivor Challenge match. When you look at the women's match and you look at the men's match, would you put this match type in the category of an early success?
Oh, man. Yeah, I would. I think I would. I thought going in I was really interested in seeing the match because I thought it had the elements to be something kind of cool, and I also thought it had the chance to be just an absolute train wreck. And it wasn't an absolute train wreck. I thought that, you know, they really kind of laid this out in a way that made sense. I thought that the commentary team in particular was effective in telling the story of what what the talent in the match like has to consider as they're wrestling it, in terms of like, okay, do I try to go for a pinfall here, or like,
and
do I want to enter first?
And that's complimentary when one half of the commentary team is Booker T.
Well, exactly. And it was very much on Vic Joseph's shoulders for sure. But I do think they did a decent job. I found myself going, all right, yeah, that makes sense. And I give it a thumbs up. I think it was worthwhile to try, and I think it's also just good to try new things in general. And so when I watch it through that lens, it is a bit of a rose-tinted lens, just because I like the idea of trying new things, especially on the NXT brand where there's not a lot of risk there. So when I look at it that way, I'd be like, okay, yeah, this is a thumbs up. Would I put Roman Reigns in a match like this on the main roster? Probably not at this point in time. I don't know that it transitions nicely at this point with top talent on Monday Night Raw or on SmackDown. But for NXT, like, this is where you want to do those kinds of things, and you're not going to hit on all of them, right? Like, there's going to be some messes, I'm sure. But this was good enough for me. I thought that they were able to have, like, Roxanne Perez in the women's match kind of the whole match was very much built around her winning and her overcoming and her kind of getting that last pinfall after being down. Like, she was kind of the underdog playing from behind that came back to win. And then they kind of did the opposite with Grayson Waller, as he's trying to run out the clock. Right. The issue that I see moving forward is I don't know how many new, and I guess you could maybe like said this after you've watched the first ladder match too, right? And they've had hundreds since then. But I don't know how many new stories you can tell with this style of match either. It seems very like one note. So we'll have to see. I'm not sure how it's going to go, but I think it was well worth trying. I thought the talent worked hard and pulled it off in both instances.
I agree. I was a little skeptical going in. When I hosted Wrestling Night in America after the War Games matches on Survivor Series, you kind of take for granted having seen those matches enough where you go in knowing the rules. And, you know, we received some calls about, you know, people who were unclear and unfamiliar mm-hmm. with the rules because it was the first time it had been done on the main roster. And there was some confusion from fans about what was going on. And then you look at the rules as they were laid out in the Iron Survivor Challenge, and you just kind of smack your head and be like, oh boy, how are they going to get through this? You know? but ultimately I think that, in a match like this, you want to, there's a very fine line in terms of, you don't want to make it realistic in terms of doing too many pinfalls. The men's match sort of rolled right up to that line, because in a normal match, you're not going to have that many pinfalls. Now, there are different factors here with more than one wrestler and with guys coming in and out of the match, so that could affect that as well. But, you know, that was one thing I looked for. The crowd seemed very receptive, and I don't know how much audio sweetening there was, because it did at times feel like there was that constant whir in the background. You know how it is when there's the audio sweetening going on and you hear that constant buzz that just it's not replicated in real life. So I'm not sure how much of it was the live audience and how much of it was that, but if it was the live audience, hey, thumbs up. And there was always something going on in the matches. There was no downtime or anything like that. There was always something going on. And I thought they did a really nice job of laying it out that way. So I agree. This is something that I think would be really cool to be specific to NXT. They had War Games, the WWE version, until Triple H decided that structure was ready to graduate to the main roster. So I would like to see this in perpetuity, used as something that is specific to NXT, something that NXT fans and the NXT brand can sort of call its own. And, you know, diving a little more into the women's match, I thought Zoe Stark really looked good. I know she's done some main event taping. She's main roster ready, I think. But, you know, Roxanne Perez, and I may talk about this a little later on when we get to the email, but she certainly seems like it, and there's been a lot of talk over the last year about someone beating Mandy Rose. Who's it going to be? If not Roxanne Perez at this moment, I really don't know who else it's going to be.
For sure. And I think it, for that reason, and I just think she's a good person to kind of hold the title after Mandy Rose, I think it's absolutely trending in that direction. And this is the first, this match was the first step in that bigger story. I don't know if they can hold it to WrestleMania weekend. That's kind of a lot. That's quite a long time, but you know, I think it's a story that if told right, can be worthy of that weekend's NXT show. I thought Zoe Stark had a really good showing in the match too. And Roxanne Perez did also, but in an entirely different way, because she was like, again, the story was her playing from behind, but Zoe Stark got to go out there and just be pretty damn lethal in the match and really kind of own her moments, and people were selling for her. So I thought she looked great. I think Roxanne Perez was the only way to go here. I mean, you could have certainly made arguments in different directions, but for this being the first match of its kind, I think you want to have somebody that's going to be a bigger name for your company, kind of owning that match and having that match victory under their belt. And Roxanne Perez absolutely makes sense to that end. So I see nothing wrong with how they book that. And real quick on the concept of the match in general in NXT, the other thing that I like about it is that it's a themed thing, but I think you can play this match in a themed environment easier than you can Hell in a Cell, where you need a feud ready for Hell in a Cell. You need a feud ready for War Games, TLC, yeah. Same kind of thing. But this, you could just kind of say, well, okay, it's this time of year again. Everybody get ready to start qualifying for the Iron Survivor Challenge. The title's on the line, or the number one contendership's on the line. And it's an easier type of match to tell that, quote-unquote time of year story around. And I think that's going to make it easier to consume and bear, 10 years from now if they're still doing it. So sidebar on that, but I wanted to point that out.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I hadn't thought about that, but you are right. It is easier to make it in that environment. And by the way, since we're giving props here, Kiana James, who I've not really been a fan of to this point, she wrestled out of her mind. She was pulling off moves that I had no idea she was capable of. So I just wanted to throw her name in there as well. The second match, Isla Dawn defeating Alba Fire. I refer to this on Twitter at Greg M. Parks as the ref got Papa Shango'd at the end by spitting up black goo. And that allowed Isla Dawn to win. We're to assume that Isla Dawn did something to him to cause him to spit up that black goo. Other than that, Zach, it was a good match. How many points do you deduct, I guess, for the Bray Wyatt type nonsense that we had hoped that we'd kind of graduated from?
Well, I deduct a lot of points for that, personally. I did not like the finish here. The black goo what are we doing here, folks? It kind of threw the whole thing off for me, it made it hard to even look back on fondly, because I just did not like that, and I just think it's a wrong direction for the feud to go, to be frank. Where do you go from here with Isla Dawn? I mean, if she can, make the black goo happen with the referee, how will she ever lose a match? I just don't know where you go. I don't know where you go with it from this point. And I just, a little too Bray Wyatt cutesy than, actual wrestling match. And I think just both women, Alba Fire in particular, just don't need that. So, I wasn't a fan. I'm obviously open to seeing where it goes, but I don't think it has very much promise at this point either.
Do you see either of these women being a part of the NXT women's title chase here soon? Alba Fire already kind of did. But do you see Isla Dawn perhaps, you know, let's fantasy book here a little bit. Roxanne Perez beats Mandy Rose. Isla Dawn seems like a pretty good character-wise match as a heel with the babyface Roxanne Perez.
She absolutely is, and I think that's a good direction to go, because I don't get the sense either that Isla Dawn is necessarily at this point pegged to be a face of the women's division. You know, I don't get that sense at this point. But she's new to NXT, so not like she's been in NXT UK, but like to the core NXT brand, she's a newer face. So maybe that can change. But you know, I think if you build her up over a couple months here, she's going to be somebody that can credibly be an opponent for Roxanne Perez, and somebody that Roxanne Perez can just kind of roll right on through and help establish her title reign. So for that, and I think Isla Dawn will be important for Roxanne Perez. Alba Fyre, if Roxanne Perez is going to be your champion, unless you turn Alba Fyre heel, I don't think that's a good fit. But Alba Fyre, to that end, has a gimmick that I think could absolutely work on the heel side of things too. So if maybe a year from now or something like that, they need heel talent, either to face Roxanne Perez or somebody else, I think she can be similar to Isla Dawn in that way and be able to carry, you know, a month feud or a 2 month feud with Roxanne Perez just fine. Of the two of them, Alba Fyre, I think, has a better shot on the main roster at this point. I think her new kind of like fire themed gimmick, you know, you can picture that on like a Monday Night Raw, I think, like it with the big screen and like all the crazy graphics that they do there. You know, I don't think she's going to be face of the women's division anytime soon, but I think she can, she has her place up there on the main roster. Probably sooner than somebody like Isla Dawn and maybe even Roxanne Perez, if Perez is going to have the, you know, a run with the title. So, I don't know where I'm taking that, but Alba Fyre, I think, has potential to be a player on the main roster just because of the style of her act.
So before the next match started, I had my question already. It was going to be, you know, we've seen guys like Apollo Crews come down from the main roster and make cameo appearances in NXT. What do you make of the New Day, a bigger name than we usually see come down, making this cameo appearance here? Well, turns out it may not be a cameo appearance because New Day defeated Pretty Deadly to win the NXT Tag Team titles. A really good match. I really enjoyed it. Pretty Deadly has gotten over with me. I was not a huge fan of them at the beginning, but I thought, you know, they've won me over with their act. And obviously they're really good in the ring. But New Day winning the titles here, Zach, that was a surprise for me. I expected some kind of schmoz as a finish here.
Big surprise. Yep, big surprise. They played up, they talked up the fact that, you know, now they're, what are they, Grand Slam tag team champions. So, you know, that's clearly a storyline point that they were wanted to go down. I just didn't think that they would make good on that. And I was thinking schmoz finish as well. But this tells me that obviously NXT is going to have access to the New Day for quite some time. But I also think in the end, though, it'll be a feud to really try to make pretty deadly. Those guys, to me, I think are perfect main roster tag team heels for Raw or for SmackDown in a Triple H environment or Vince McMahon environment, like either way, like it, I think they just fit. I think they fit what WWE wants to be from a main roster perspective. And, you know, being able to work with the New Day and not just have like a one-off match with them where, okay, they wrestle, schmoz finish, and that's it. Like here, it looks like they're going to have a longer-term story, and New Day is going to hold the titles for a while. And then at some point, I'd presume that they are going to put Pretty Deadly over. And at that point, that's a significant win, but it's also significant experience for Pretty Deadly to have, wrestling that caliber of a team with that much, you know, star power as a team, albeit colder, you know, now than they were a handful of years ago, of course. But I think it's just it's a means to really try to get Pretty Deadly over. And if it's done right, I think it'll have a very positive impact on them. And in the short term, it just may draw some eyeballs over to the NXT brand for fans of people who are fans of the New Day. And so in the short term, that's a benefit as well.
And I also think it could be reinvigorating for New Day. You know, they seem to be the kind of guys who want to give back, who in this environment would really thrive at this stage of their careers. You know, they've done everything there is to do on the main roster. WWE is trying to get some new tag teams over with Legado del Fantasma, with the Viking Raiders, sort of reintroducing them with Valhalla. You know, there's some other tag teams up there on SmackDown. So, you know, give them a break, kind of give them a breather from the main roster. Let them come down here. Let them have a little fun, and which we know they like to do. So I think it could be invigorating for, you know, specifically Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston as well, you know, with Big E still out nursing the neck injury. You know, this gives them something a little different to do for a team that's kind of been doing the same thing for a long time.
Absolutely. That's a good point. They do need a refresher. And maybe they can find it here, like maybe not even from a storyline perspective or a character perspective, but just from like a real world perspective. They're working in front of a new crowd, new environment with a brand new team or a brand new opponent. That can be reinvigorating. So that's a great point.
The second Iron Survivor Challenge match saw Grayson Waller defeat Axiom, Carmelo Hayes, JD McDonagh, and Joe Gacy. So like you said earlier, this was a match that had a different story, a lot more pinfalls in this one than we saw in the women's match, but it played a part in the finish with Grayson Waller getting the victory. You know, again, really well worked. Axiom and JD McDonagh started it off. I liked the idea we talked about last week of who should be that final spot that Axiom ended up getting by virtue of his victory on NXT TV. I thought he would add a different dimension to this match, and I think he did that. But yeah, this was fun. You know, they had the clocks. I thought the screen was very helpful too, where they had everybody it risked getting cluttered with the timer that was counting up. You had the timers that were counting down for the folks who were in the penalty box. You had the scores on the screen for how many falls people had. But I thought it ended up working really well. I didn't think it was as cluttered as I feared.
I agree 1,000%. And that was one of the things I was wondering about. Like, how are they going to, like, from a production standpoint, how will they pull this off? Because you do have multiple clocks for one thing. Like, that was the first thing that stuck out in my head. Like, how are they going to – like, that's going to be so annoying to, like, have these two clocks. But it really wasn't. And this match in particular, the men's match, I think it was a little more action-packed as far as the falls went, and therefore the people in the penalty box went. And you even saw, like, some battling in the penalty box, which I thought was cool. I thought they had some really unique, just some unique spots in this as well. And the camera was able to keep up with all the action for the most part that had some of it spilled on the outside of the ring. Everybody got like some moments in the match, like even like a JD McDonagh, like at the end, like almost making the comeback. Carmelo Hayes, I thought looked like a star even in losing. And I think sooner or later, if like that guy is going to be a babyface, and he kind of had like a babyface role in the finish, like kind of trying to chase down like the heel Waller who's running away and not fighting. Like that seemed very babyface-esque to me, and the crowd reacts to him in a big way. He may not be long for NXT period, just because I know Triple H and Shawn Michaels are high on him, and he's shown why. But I thought everybody just kind of did their thing, stayed in their lane. And in the end, they were able to have a good match that was entertaining, but also, you know, kind of in line with the stipulations and the rules of the match too. So thumbs up. It was different than the women's match, which is one thing I was definitely looking for. Like, okay, you don't want to just like Hell in a Cells and War Games and whatever you want to, you can't you don't want to see the same match twice on the same show. And it really seemed like there was a concerted effort here to not do that. And I thought they pulled it off.
And then the main event, Bron Breakker defeating Apollo Crews to retain the NXT Championship. Grayson Waller, the new number one contender by virtue of his victory in the Iron Survivor Challenge match, attacked Bron Breakker after the match. It does seem like NXT is setting up its biggest heel, Grayson Waller, against the champion, and its biggest babyface in Roxanne Perez against the champion. So it does seem like they're setting up for a very big show at some point, whether it's the WrestleMania weekend show you mentioned earlier or some other show that they will do. I know they have a special New Year's Evil TV show that they advertised during this show that will be taking place in January. But Bron Breakker, where do you fall on Bron Breakker? I think we have a big enough sample size right now of his work to make some judgments about him. Clearly, WWE thinks he's a huge deal. He was brought in by Vince McMahon when they switched to NXT 2.0 and pushed almost immediately to the top with very few matches, at least on television, under his belt. And he's really been there ever since. You know, we haven't seen the Triple H regime do much to throw cold water on this Bron Breakker push. So do you see him being the level of main event star on the main roster that creative seems to be making him out to be, or do you see some flaws that could really hold him back getting to the level that others may think he could get to on the main roster?
So I think he has some flaws. I think he has some issues that in the year that we've seen him at the top of this brand or this company that have not cleaned themselves up or got better. I'll start with the positives, though, because I do think he has a lot of positives. One being there is a presence that Bron Breakker has that just others don't have in wrestling, period, like on the main roster in AEW. Like, he has like a star-type presence to me. Like, when I see him out there, I'm like, all right, yeah, this guy could be a big star. He carries himself with that kind of weight. He has that kind of natural charisma. I think he comes across as like really athletic and really confident and really intense. And that's all part of the character that they try to sell too. So thumbs up in that regard. And so when you look at like, okay, why was this guy chosen to kind of be the guy? That's why. And all those things stick out in a big way. Where the issue that I see is there has not been much development from him, like from an in-ring perspective. It's all still very much the same as it was when he started. And it's kind of like, it reminds me of like 2015 Roman Reigns in terms of like, it's this move, it's that move, it's some punches, it's the spear, and then that's it, you know? Add on to that, that the talent that he's worked opposite are all just tremendous workers up to this point. Like, he's worked with Tommaso Ciampa, he's worked with Santos Escobar, he's worked with JD McDonagh, Tyler Bate, like top in-ring guys that he's able to go in there and has had some good matches with, but they're all very similar matches. And he's more so than that, in terms of this criticism, he's doing the same types of things in all of those matches. And it's kind of like a one note thing. So I think if he's going to like survive on the main roster, I think he has to develop his in-ring game. The thing that Roman Reigns had that even Bron Breakker doesn't have was just an insane, like just an insane athleticism for professional wrestling. Like, he could sell, which I think Bron Breakker needs some work to, there's some work to be done in that regard. Reigns was very much like a video game wrestler, but there was an element to that game though that you could like sense some feeling there and some emotion there. And I think that's what Bron Breakker has to bring to his performances a little bit. And he also has room to grow on the microphone as well. Like, he's got to be able to cut that babyface promo. We haven't seen him do that too much. So I still think he could be a top player. I think he's got it in him, because I think a lot of that charisma stuff and the kind of just like, oh, he's a star, is not something that you can teach or like develop fully. Like some, you either have it or you don't. And I think he does, but he has to, I think, up his game in some other areas to really transition over the way that, you know, Triple H would want.
I thought in the build-up to this match with Apollo Crews, they did a really nice job of getting him out of his element and growing the character a little bit. To this point, we've seen a lot of Bron Breakker as kind of the screaming and, you know, not a lot of character development. But, you know, they made a concerted effort. You know, they showed him sitting down at the diner, having a normal conversation with Apollo Crews. They showed him out fishing, having a normal conversation. So it does seem like there's at least an attempt at this point to kind of grow that character and kind of grow that promo ability beyond the just growling, you know, babyface come and get me challenge that he was known for the longest time. So hopefully his in-ring, like you mentioned, will follow suit where, you know, establish who he is, establish this is who he is from an in-ring standpoint. Okay, now let's start growing out from there. And hopefully that follows soon.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I certainly think it's worthwhile to keep going with it, you know? Like, I don't think you pull the plug.
Not by a long shot.
So, yeah.
Our email question to kind of close the show, this is from Azan. I hope I'm saying that right. Azan in St. Louis. He says, hello, Greg and Zach. With the weekend being over and both shows this weekend being pretty good, who was the personality on either show that got over with you the most, or who was the new breakout star of the weekend? From Azan in St. Louis, go VIP. Thank you, Azan. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Gosh, I gotta think about that.
Yeah, I do too. That's a good question. Let's see.
I mean,
I'm trying to go through.
The breakout seems to be an implication that it can't be someone who is already kind of like a known quantity, I guess, is what I'm looking at. So,
yes.
I mean, I think, and I mentioned it earlier, Kiana James is someone, I don't know if you'd say breakout star, because, you know, when you're in a match with four other women, there's a tendency for not much to stand out. But she had two or three moves that just kind of left my jaw on the floor that I was totally not expecting from her. So in terms of getting over with me the most, it might be her. You know, as I'm going to be watching her matches a little differently now on TV going forward. You know, Roxanne Perez, by virtue of her winning, I thought she did a really nice job there. You know, if I look at ROH, I mean, I don't know if there was anyone that I didn't expect. Athena, maybe, just because she had been sort of, you know, she had been a little cold in AEW, then she sort of found her footing, and then, you know, this is really the first huge match that she's had with this character, and she absolutely delivered. So I think she's worth mentioning there as well in terms of a potential breakout, although if you're going to be in ROH, there's a ceiling on how much you can really break out, I think, with the show being on Honor Club. So I've vamped long enough here, Zach, for you to hopefully pick someone that you found as a breakout star or someone who got over with you the most is the wording in the question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go Zoe Stark. I think, and I'll say that I think that women's match was primed to like cultivate an answer to this question, because I think it had a lot of talent in it that were like kind of just waiting to come out a little bit that you hadn't seen a lot of yet. But to that end, to answer the question, yeah, Zoe Stark, I think she had a really good night out there. Her offense was really crisp. Her presence was on point. She looked like she could be like, you know, when we talk about potential heel challengers for Roxanne Perez, like, that's a name that I think is gonna come up. I thought she just had a really good night at the office, and I just wasn't really expecting it either. There's been some glimpses of like her kind of putting everything together, but you hadn't really seen it yet. And I thought you saw like the road to like what a finished Zoe Stark product might look like, and that was a good night for her. On the ROH side of things, I don't know if there really is somebody that stands out, because I have expectations for most of the folks that are on that show, and they all delivered on them for you know, in most instances that I can think of right now. So, yeah, the best answer is Zoe Stark, and I'm, or at least, you know, and Kiana James too, in a similar vein. And I think I can defend that. Somebody called me out on it. So thumbs up.
For sure. And if someone would want to call you out on that, Zach, where can they find you on social media? And while you're at it, let everybody know your work for the Torch and what you do.
Yeah, awesome. Appreciate it, Greg. Thanks so much for having me. It's always a blast to be on with you. And we always get to talk some really cool topics. So I appreciate it. You guys can follow me on Twitter and call me out on a host of different things if you'd like, at ZHeyDornTorch. That's where you can find me there. I usually post all the different things that we're doing at the Torch there too. So that'd be a good place to start, at ZHeyDornTorch. And as far as the Torch goes, just keep it locked to pwtorch.com on a daily basis. We've got a variety of different news that goes up all day long. We've got some in-depth coverage of the Tony Khan post-final battle press conference. We had a PW Torch contributor on site that took some video and just recorded and asked some really good questions. So that's up on pwtorch.com right now. And then also in terms of video, head over to YouTube. We relaunched the YouTube channel in March of this year, and it's got some really fun traction and some really cool content, and you can really kind of sink your teeth into a lot there. So youtube.com/PWTorch. Would love for you guys to give us a shot and subscribe.
Perfect. Zach, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on tonight and discussing these two big shows with us.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Anytime, man.
All right. And don't forget our schedule for the upcoming weeks. Next week, I will not be here, but we will have a show with a guest host. And then we'll be taking the next week off, and then I should be back here on January 1st, New Year's Day evening, hosting Wrestling Night in America once again. So thank you so much for your patronage of our show and for PW Torch. PWTorch.com/GoVIP is where you can go to become a member of the Torch family, and you can follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Park. So thank you so much. We'll talk to you after the holiday season, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.